You are listening to the Power of Why podcast.
I have so many interests because of how I grew up that I can't study one thing that would give me all of
the exposure
and the creativity. But accounting did. With being an accountant, I was able to work with engineers. I was able to work with scientists. I was able to kind of dabble into a little bit of everything else. So it satisfied my curiosity in robotics, in engineering, in mechanics, in biosciences, in all kinds of areas that I actually have a lot of interest in.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Power of Why podcast. My name is Naomi Hailey, and today we are here with Jennifer Lukong. Jennifer, it's great to have you here. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Naomi. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm really excited for us to dive in. For those tuning in, Jennifer is passionate about supporting people and communities, whether working with scientists and professionals to expand their ideas and develop their companies, or with local charities. Today, she's the co-founder and CEO of The Aggressive Good, TAG, with a mission to create cutting-edge technology solutions that help suppliers, retailers, and consumers advance their sustainability objectives. She's a senior executive with over 25 years of small, medium, and large company experience, ranging from chief operating officer, board member, chief financial officer, and controller. She has multinational expertise in all aspects of company growth, which we'll delve into, from fundraising, operations, product, financials, and commercialization. She has a proven ability to structure businesses successfully. And when she's not poring over spreadsheets and business models, you can find her honing her carpentry skills, planting her next crop in the garden, or exploring somewhere in the forest or jungle, which I'm super fascinated by. Jennifer, it's super great to have you here.
It all seemed like a mouthful to say.
That's why I was taking it slow, because you have a fascinating story starting from your childhood and the things that you were really curious by. And I think that's probably informed a lot of the stuff you're doing today. But yeah, it's so great to have you here, Jennifer. I would love for you to start by sharing a little bit more about your origin story and like, how did you grow up? Were you encouraged to color outside of the lines or stay within them?
Well, my parents came here as immigrants quite some time ago. So we grew up very, very poor. Here in Canada, they landed in Toronto, navigated quite a number of things, but I think at the time there wasn't as many resources, I think, for immigrants as there is now. So it was quite a challenge, which created, I would say, quite a colorful growing up for my siblings and I. But you know, notwithstanding that, I think it taught me a lot. And one thing I really learned about from my parents and from navigating moving from one country to another is the hustle, mm-hmm. and what that looks like. That I think has shaped my entire life, including today, how I work, how I coach and navigate and help other people as well through their profession, and how I help younger professionals come up. I was not encouraged to color outside of the lines at all. In fact, I would say I was probably a little bit of a rotten kid, because I come from quite a very Asian background. And it was, you know, you had to do this, you had to study, and everything that you did had to be perfect. So there was no coloring outside of the lines. And because of that, I think style of parenting and pressure, I just resisted every step of the way as much as I could. And that's probably why I'm an entrepreneur today, and why I've spent almost my entire career working as a consultant and working for myself. So I'm only always accountable to myself and really don't want to take anyone else's direction. So that, yeah, I would say that a lot of that had to do with how I grew up, had to do with being an entrepreneur and my perseverance into my career.
In our last conversation, you something that I resonated with was you telling me that you had a myriad of jobs as a teen.
Yeah, there was not one day I was not working. I had so many part-time jobs. You know, in our family, you work, you go to school, you work until it's time to go to bed, and then you get up and you repeat. And so I've always had at least 2, 3, sometimes 4 jobs on the go. And I don't know, it was what you did. There was no downtime. There was no such thing as downtime. As soon as you were able and you were at the age of working, that's what you did. So I had quite a healthy work experience, let's say.
Yeah, before 20 you had.
Yeah, from a very, very young age. You know, from kind of typical, you know, I never did a lot of serving. You know, when you're young, most people do like serving jobs, but I actually think I had only 1 or 2, but I did do retail. I had an opportunity to work in a law firm, actually at a very young age, a couple law firms, which really taught me a lot. I would say one of them was fairly pivotal in kind of shaping my view of how I would lead my career. And that was mainly because of the people I worked with. And at that particular law firm, it was quite a large law firm. There was a lot of partners, but there was only one female partner. Mm-hmm. And I worked in the accounting office. And in the accounting office, it was all women, but our head CFO was the boss. Mm-hmm. And that female partner was a boss. Like, they were amazing. One thing I learned from the CFO who I reported to, and what she really taught me, was it didn't matter what role you had. You always had to roll up your sleeves. And so that's what I did. And she did as well. So a lot of times when we were busy in the office, she actually would do our filing because we needed help and we were super busy. It was like year end. And she's like, okay, I have a bit of time. Who needs my help? Like, what can I do? Let me do your filing. Let me help you get some things off your plate. Like, she was amazing.
Mm-hmm. And it was like a spirit that you always seem to have, right, growing up. And so I think being in that environment and seeing someone that you like looked up to who also moved that way as well.
Yeah.
How did that shape, like, you have a lot of breadth and depth to your portfolio of experiences, right? Can you talk a little bit about if it's that organization specifically or any others that really positioned you to kind of take off in your career and delve into like the accounting space? I'm assuming is where you started, right, Jennifer?
Accounting was where I started. So I actually started doing accounting and doing the books. So I studied it in school because, you know, like I said, there was only a couple of options I was allowed to do.
Right.
Or let's say encouraged to do. I feel like the word allowed is a little bit too harsh, but like strongly encouraged to do. Accounting was one of them. And it was something I was very good at in school. I didn't have to think about it. Numbers in my head always made sense. And so right from, I would say, started my very first bookkeeping and accounting job when I was 16. Kept doing that continuously. Mm-hmm. What I did learn is that I don't like accounting.
You're so good at it, but didn't like it. Okay.
But I didn't like it. But it wasn't where my passion was. It was a form of functionality, right? Like I had to do it. I was good at it. So I stuck with it. But it also allowed me to see so many other industries because everyone needs an accountant, you know, and that when I was in that firm, I watched all different types of aspects of legal and all the different lawyers. And it's very fascinating to see everything and all the projects and cases that they touched, but they were still lawyers. And I think that's what I learned through that experience, was that I have so many interests because of how I grew up that I can't study one thing that would give me all of
the exposure
and the creativity that I wanted to see and I wanted to experience. But accounting did. with being an accountant, I was able to work with engineers. I was able to work with scientists. I was able to kind of dabble into a little bit of everything else. So it satisfied my curiosity in robotics, in engineering, in mechanics, in biosciences, in all kinds of areas that I actually have a lot of interest in.
And when did that click for you? You mentioned that you have a bookkeeping company and you were able to fulfill this need for different people and organizations, even if you didn't enjoy it per se, but you could use it as an entryway to fulfill your curiosities and your love for learning. Like, when did that click for you?
I think at the law firm working for that particular CFO, she grew up on a farm, which is probably why she had that same hustle in her, because she was always up super early working at the farm and then would come to work. And she had asked me if I would help her on the farm and do the accounting. And of course, one job wasn't enough. So I was like, yeah, of course.
I'm in.
I'll help you. No problem. And so I ended up working at this creamery, and it was amazing being exposed to like just that type of lifestyle. It was something I completely had no idea about because I grew up in the city, right? And so just being exposed to the farming life and how it works was super fascinating to me. And that's when I realized that, okay, like as an accountant, I can work in a law firm and I can work in a very corporate environment, or I can work on a farm because they still need my expertise as well. And I can get exposed to what that looks like. And I loved it. I loved working for them.
I'm wondering for the folks who may have like a similar mindset to you, love to work, curious by many things, good at many things. At that point, it didn't seem like you're really concerned about finding the right thing. You found opportunities, developed and grew that way. What were some of the critical experiences that really enabled you to build and strengthen your toolkit, know how to refine your expertise as you went along and built your career?
I always stayed in, although I, you know, accounting wasn't like something I loved, I always stayed in the accounting field. And, you know, I studied accounting when I moved. So I left the city where I was working and I actually moved up to Ottawa. And I had an opportunity to work for the National Research Council. I took it. And the funny thing is I applied for just an admin assistant job just to get in. And I quickly transitioned to the finance team. I never applied for jobs or looked at a particular position and decided I want that position. I really just looked at an organization and what they were doing and thought, I want to work there. And how am I going to get in? The easiest way possible. Even if it meant taking an assistant job, I would do that. And then I would work my way once I was in the organization. And I understood, you know, what they were doing and what roles that they had. So that's how I was able to actually get in there. And working in finance and accounting, I would say I read about it every day. I learned something. That was my thing. Like every day, even though it wasn't my passion, I would force myself to learn one thing new about accounting, even if it's a policy change, like a process change, I would learn one thing new. And I continue to do that even today because processes, policies change all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think no matter what, you always have to stay up to date in your own practice and what you choose to spend your time doing on a daily basis.
I like how you took the path of least resistance. Like you're maybe fascinated by the product or the service that they're working on. How would you spend, okay, besides learning one thing a day in your field, how would you spend your time while you were there? Were you meeting people in different functions? What did sitting in on meetings, like what did that look like for you practically?
I worked for the Biological Sciences Institute when I got in there. And that to me was like the best job I had ever gotten. And I mean, by that time, I started there when I was 18. So I was still a kid. But I thought it was the best job you could ever have in the world, because I was around labs. I was around scientists and researchers, and they were just doing cool things, even though half of it more than half, I would say probably 85% of it, I just did not understand. But I was around all of the science, and they were so passionate about what they did and what they studied. That to me was really, really fascinating. So it made me want to learn what they were doing. So I would spend a lot of time doing my job, but I would spend a lot mm-hmm. of time with them in their labs, just listening to them on mm-hmm. learning what they were doing. Even if I only captured like a small percentage and understood it, I would then go home and like I'd read about it if there was something I didn't understand, or ask more questions. And to me, like just having that open mind of learning mm-hmm. like everything and trying to absorb as much as possible was, you know, just kind of how I maneuvered through life.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure this, just given like how you navigate and how you see the world, you probably had so many ideas throughout your career on like things you could create and develop.
Yeah. I have books and on designs and ideas, some very, very bizarre when I look back and read some of it.
Like books that you've written on?
Just notes.
Gotcha.
Yeah, just notes that I, like sometimes I have ideas a lot of times in the middle of the night because I don't sleep a whole lot. And I have ideas and, you know, maybe kind of like in a waking dream state, I come up with these ideas and I started writing them down. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This episode is brought to you in collaboration with Invest Ottawa, Ottawa's lead economic development agency for knowledge-based industries, and with critical support of the title sponsor of International Women's Month, BDC Capital's Thrive Venture Fund, we teamed up to produce this special podcast series to celebrate women leading in Ottawa. In support of its Women Founders and Owners strategy, Invest Ottawa offers programs and services that enable and accelerate the growth and success of women entrepreneurs from every walk of life. Visit www.investottawa.ca/women to learn more. And so now you're working on The Aggressive Good. What a fascinating company. In my preparation for our conversation, I've looked at different videos online, interviews that you've done with your co-founder. What a cool product. Can you tell us a little bit about The Aggressive Good, where the idea originated from, and what you folks are working on right now?
So The Aggressive Good was, I think, born out of my co-founder, Jeff McKay. We had met through a mutual friend of ours, and he had this idea to automate bulk food dispensing. Really had some challenges because he has dietary restrictions, I have some dietary restrictions, and shopping bulk was just not, you know, safe for somebody that has any type of food allergy. And then we saw that shut down actually across the board when COVID happened.
Yeah.
So, you know, he had this idea, but he didn't have a strong business background. And so my friend, she introduced us. So he was explaining it to her and she's like, oh, you have to meet Jen. You know, she has long history in finance and helping founders or helping scientists commercialize their ideas. And when we met, I just felt our connection was great. Like we really connected. And he was somebody who shared the same life values that I have and who lived his truth every day, which was something that you don't meet very often. It was a breath of fresh air for me because that's how I live my life. And whether people agree with some of the decisions that I've made over the years, you know, is debatable, but you know, we both live that way. And so it just seemed like a really good match for our team. And you know, he works for like Ottawa Fire Department. And so I always like to refer when I talk about him, I always refer to him as like this superhero guy. So somebody who saves lives during the day and the planet by night, right? And so, you know, we both have a very strong environmental sensibility and care for the environment, because we spent a lot of time, I think, growing up camping and just being out in the environment. And so it was very important for me to do something that supported the environment at some point in my career. Meeting Jeff was just the perfect opportunity, because he had this idea that made sense. You know, if we can eliminate all of the single-use packaging with this system, if we can take the data that we capture and really refine a supply chain that not just eliminated the single-use packaging, but also reduced food waste, yeah, you know, that to me, that's a game changer in an industry that really, really needed it and still needs it. That's how we got together and how we formed TAG. And we met with the engineer, and I mean, he had known the engineer before, but we started working on what a prototype would look like, you know, building out the idea of the company and really looking at what we wanted to develop. It took us a while to get to where we are today, I would say, because we were very focused on solving this supply chain issue in the grocery space, because that's where people understand shopping bulk and retail. And so we were very focused on that. And it wasn't until we had an opportunity with Google that we just completely pivoted the company. You know, we had this amazing opportunity with their food team to work with them to develop a system that would deliver their snacks to their employees in a packageless way.
Mm.
Yeah. And in a safe and sanitary way as well. You know, because like during the pandemic, all bulk shut down. People really started thinking about, well, whose other fingers were in the cookie jar kind of idea, right?
Yeah.
Whereas before, nobody like really cared as much or thought about it as much. At least it wasn't front center in mind. And so we were able to actually pilot our system with the food team. And we did quite a huge pilot. We did a global pilot with them. We assessed the data that we captured, the functionality of the system, ease of use for their employees. And we thought, you know, why hammer at an industry that is so opposed to changing? The grocery industry will change because they have to change and because they'll be legislated to change. Other than that, they continue to move forward, right? And work their regular day because that's how they know, and that's what they know. And they don't care that much because their margins are so small. So we thought, okay, well, that'll be a phase two. Let's really tackle everybody's everyday life. Like, let's go after people go to work, they want a snack. Let's look at developing a packageless vending machine. And it works for us. You know, we wanted to build out a lifestyle that people can think about every day, and make it very easy for them to eliminate their packaging footprint, contribute to the health of the environment, and feel like they're contributing. Because, you know, these days, everyone talks about being sustainable and having to lower your carbon footprint. But what does that really mean? Does that mean switching to solar, switching to wind, carbon credits? To me, those are all amazing opportunities, buying an electric vehicle. But how many people can access that, right? How many people can actually access buying an EV, switching out at home and affording to put solar panels in? The average everyday person can't. So with TAG, we wanted to really develop solutions that still had the technology behind it, so that we can still look at the data that we can capture and keep refining systems, but that everybody can access and everybody has to eat. So even if you are the poorest kid on the block, you know, which was me growing up, I can take my quarters. These days, it's your card. you know, and you can have a tag membership card and that kid can just tap their card and they can still get food. And that's the idea, and still feel good about it because now they're not buying a packaged bag that goes in the garbage that never gets recycled.
Wow. I'm curious, like how, because again, you talked about path of least resistance, you know, first attempt thinking that you would break way in the grocery space. How long did it take to say, okay, like we can double down on this other opportunity before making the switch? Like, was it something that was difficult to pivot, or you saw the opportunity, both of you, and said, let's try to make a run here?
I think we both saw the opportunity. I think from an early stage, we saw the opportunity of our system in many different markets, because it's actually applicable to a lot of different markets, but we had to focus, and everyone kept telling us to focus. And so we did, and we focused on the grocery chain, which happens to be, you know, a very difficult wheel to turn, right? And it's there's so many different decision makers in that supply chain. So how would we do it? Whereas if we pivoted to corporate offices and we pivoted to commercial real estate and setting up that kind of packageless vending machine, then we can control that model in the beginning. And we can get it out to the market faster. And so it made sense to us to pivot.
For both of you, I like how you talked about the system that you've created. It basically carries, tracks, and dispenses bulk goods. And then you talked a little bit about the data that you're able to capture on the back end for like inventory control, automatic purchase orders, which is super cool. Where do you both see this expanding to and like the potential of the systems and technology that you've created? What do you hope to see?
We hope to see everyone buy into the tag lifestyle. we want to create a tag movement. We're coining the new SaaS model, which we call Snack as a Service.
Yeah, that was so, when I saw that, I loved it. Yeah.
And, you know, we want to see it everywhere. We even want to see it in food banks, you know, because everyone should be able to access food and not be restricted by the budget that they have, because maybe that package that they need to buy to feed however many members in their family is too large and too expensive. And they won't consume all of it that day. So maybe they just have enough money to feed their family today and they should be able to access food. And that's our model. We want to see tag systems everywhere. We want that to be the new way that people look at filling their pantry, snacking, you know, just like how most people now are accustomed to taking their grocery bag to the store. When they got rid of plastic bags at grocery, right. Everyone's right. Like, no way, we're not going to change. But now
you adjust it immediately.
Just do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, taking your water bottle, taking your coffee cup, and your coffee mug in your car. The next step is take your little snack container, keep it in your car. So when you stop at the gas station and you want a snack, you'll see our tag machine and you can get snacks in bulk and you can fill your container and you're not buying another packaged good. So we want people to be able to see it as taking your water bottle and filling it everywhere.
I'm curious, reflecting on your life and your life experiences, what experiences do you think that you've said yes to lend themselves really well to just building, like building with intention? What has been really critical for you to like lean into these opportunities?
Patience. You have to have patience in anything that you do. You know, I think that sometimes people think that they can make change right away, or things are easier than they really are, or they're afraid to fail. You know, people sometimes won't try things because they don't want to fail at it, but it's okay to fail at something. You just pick yourself up and you try again. And I think there's a certain amount of patience that comes with anything, and patience builds perseverance. And you need that as an entrepreneur.
I'm sure you can like recount many scenarios where you've had to demonstrate patience or like be patient in a certain process. Is there one that sticks out to you?
Gardening. Mm-hmm. When you plant something, you don't reap the benefits right away. And in some cases, you don't see it for years, but it doesn't mean that you don't plant that seed, right? And I think that applies throughout many aspects of life, including one's profession, because you have to start somewhere. And you may not see the successes that you want to see or that beautiful bloom until much later in your life, but it doesn't mean you don't start.
Mm-hmm. And I actually didn't realize until today that you worked on a farm and had that opportunity pretty early in your life doing accounting for that partner. The other thing that I think about, out of the many things that I admire about you, you are... like it seems like everything that you've decided to do has like prepared you for what you're doing today, you know, because you said yes to things and we're just ready to dive in. Do you think about that as well, your preparedness in how that's been able to help you in your career?
You know, I don't. I always feel like I should prepare more. I always feel like I don't prepare enough, and sometimes I just wing it and it ends up turning out. But yeah, I would say there's so much in my career, like I just have not had control over. And whether it's kind of the path that I chose or a decision that I made that kind of led to something that I wasn't expecting, or the people that I had to deal with and the patience that I had to endure. Yeah. to deal with those people taught me a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes when you go through life, you start getting stuck in your own way and seeing things from your lens. And you have to remember that sometimes there's no right or wrong answer. There's multiple ways of getting to the end, and somebody else needs your support as well. And they see things in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
But you still have the same goal. You still have the same end goal. You still want to get to the same place. So you have to work as a team. It's not just you that's doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're coming up to the end, but I did have, you know, in your bio, we kind of talked about carpentry, jungles, and just being out like in nature and in the environment. And you've talked like through, as you were describing the mission of TAG and some of the things that you and Jeff were able to connect on. How have you, in your mind, do you see like your appreciation for nature really connecting with your interest in sustainability? Like, what is your connection with nature and the environment?
I think my exposure to it came at a very, very young age. You know, my family grew up camping. My parents took us camping all the time. And I think, you know, they came from a tropical environment. So when they came to Canada, I think maybe that was a way for them to reconnect with the environment and their home, going camping, because they were, you know, it's Canada's environment. It's Canada's forest that, you know, different temperature, but still lots of trees, lots of green space, really living in the wild. And so we spent a lot of time camping. You know, I spent a lot of time throughout my life traveling and really hiking through jungles and forests. And my dad grew up in the rainforest. And I think that seeing that really lends to what TAG's mission is and the sustainability, because as time goes on, even just a year or 2 years, the difference in mm-hmm. what I saw at one period of time to today is quite different. Our impact in the environment is so fast that we can't undo it as quickly. And so I think it's really important to find a way to live sustainably and to live in sync with your environment. So you're supporting your environment. Otherwise, it won't support you. At the end of the day, my goal is to retire back into the rainforest.
Yeah, when you shared this with me, I thought it was so beautiful. And I think the moment, even during the pandemic, the moment we lost access to a lot of the things that were just normal, that felt very normal, there was this like yearning to connect back to nature. And everyone was like at a different cabin every weekend and stuff, and hiking a lot, right? Like you saw the surge in so many like different extracurricular activities, and like you can see a bigger theme there, you know, like just our very natural connection with nature. And so I appreciate you talking about it, and also being able to align your love and your interest in this space and like use your gifts to be able to make change in the world. I think that's really, really powerful. The last question I'd love to ask is, what's the best investment that you've made in yourself, and how did you decide to make it?
That's a very good question. The best investment that I've made in myself, I think building a home. I think the best investment I ever made was building a home. This is where I honed my carpentry skills.
Yeah.
I actually bought a house that was falling apart, literally, and never gave up on it. And spent a lot of time, and still do, working on it and building something that I can call my own, but also building a space that now feels like home and is comfortable. You know, I moved around a lot throughout my life, so finding a place that I could call home was very important.
Yeah, I'm glad you found that. And I hope for everyone listening that you ask yourself what home is to you, and whether it's like finding a project that you can turn into your home or whatever it is for you. I hope this episode inspires you to, I guess, like think differently about how you use your skills and your expertise. And I would love if you could share, what is the best place for people to connect with you, Jennifer, online or follow the TAG mission?
I would say follow the TAG mission. You know, we're really going to try and have it reflect our own lives as well and how we live. Follow me online is probably not the best way to get a hold of me. As much as I can, I try and stay offline and you know, be out in my garden and or in a forest somewhere. But I'm quite accessible even just through our website. And I will always make time to take a call or answer an email or just meet in person.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you for taking the time to be on the Power of Why podcast. Thank you to everyone who made the time to listen to this conversation. We will catch you in the next episode. Thank you for listening to the Power of Why podcast. You can find the show notes at www.naomihiley.com. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to the Power of Why on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. This episode was brought to you in collaboration with Invest Ottawa and with critical support from BDC Capital's Thrive Venture Fund, the title sponsor of International Women's Month 2024. We've teamed up to produce this special series featuring 6 inspirational leaders. Visit www.investottawa.ca/IWM to learn more.